This is Ed Mazur, chairman of the City Club of Chicago. Our speaker today was the entertaining Rich Miller, the publisher and editor of Capital Facts since 1993. Capital Facts is a daily online political newsletter that has become a must-read for policymakers, lobbyists, political junkies, and journalists throughout Illinois. Also, he is a columnist occasionally for Crane Chicago Business. Miller tried to sum up the year that was in Illinois politics and government, and he had some very interesting observations. He addressed a variety of issues, including Governor Rauner as governor, as party leader, as incapable of compromise. When asked about a coming budget for fiscal year 2019, Miller says he sees a stopgap budget. He talked about the Democratic gubernatorial primary, and he said that J.B. Pritzker has a better field organization, 18 offices, more money than any of us in this room of 335 would ever have, and a knowledgeable staff, much better than Chris Kennedy or Daniel Biss at this time. When asked about gubernatorial debates at the state level, Miller said those debates are not game changers. Viewers do not tune in to state debates as they would in a presidential debate. The small money contributions that fueled Bernie Sanders' presidential campaign in 2016 are not important in state races because, as Miller said, the governor doesn't have his hand on the nuclear code or the CIA. If Rauner is defeated, many Republican legislators will be left adrift because they become too dependent on his money and his support. An issue that we don't know enough about is what will happen with Speaker Madigan in this race. Miller feels this could be a game changer for the Republicans, possibly. The charge of Governor Rauner that he's not in charge will be damaging, he concluded, because voters want someone to be in charge. When asked about the Attorney General's race, where there are 11 candidates, including two women, he said, you know, that ex-Governor Quinn has the first ballot spot, and this could be very, very interesting.
Hello, everybody. Kind of packed in like sardines this year, man. I couldn't even hardly get up to the podium. Of course, my girth is getting a little, ever since I quit smoking. Yeah, I ain't going back to that. All we got to do is cut you open like that. You want a cigarette? You just look at your chest. Nope. I want to thank everybody who brought toys for Lutheran Social Services of Illinois. There's a great big stack out there. So give yourselves a round of applause for that. You know, everybody has seen a time travel movie or, you know, read a book about, you know, fictitious time travel. And one thing that they always say to avoid doing is you don't do anything that might, you know, even a little thing. It could change history forever. Just a minor thing you wouldn't even notice. So when you think about it, it's entirely possible that one of you who purchased one of those toys could change history forever. And so think about that as you go forward in life. Just these little things. You just never know. And we cannot change the past. We know that. There is no time travel. But we can learn from it. So, for instance, President Trump's disapproval. Ha. The other thing about getting old is I can't read my own notes. President Trump's disapproval is 20 points above his approval rating right now. At this point in 2005, George W. Bush's rating was a bit better than that. But the Republicans went on to get shellacked in 2006, as you will recall. Rob Blagojevich's chief fundraiser was indicted just a couple of weeks before his reelection, and he still won by 10 points. That's how strong that wave was. Fast forward to 2010, a ferocious Republican wave this time. Pat Quinn, Governor Quinn, survived it, partly because he ran a better campaign than his Republican opponent, Bill Brady, did, but also because you know, this is, it's a Democratic-leaning state. And that helped get him across the finish line. 2014, another national Republican wave. This time, Governor Quinn did not survive it. He did not run a good campaign. He needed the best campaign he'd ever run, and he simply didn't do it. Bruce Rauner, on the other hand, ran one of the best statewide campaigns that I've ever seen in this state. Because I don't care about other states. He had money, he had messaging, and he had fields. In 2017, Governor Rauner vetoes a tax hike. It's overridden. And he manages to turn a victory, which is he had the issue of vetoing a tax hike while still having the money to spend, into a loss by firing his chief of staff, bringing in untested people from outside the government, mainly, at least partially, from the Illinois Policy Institute, which set off a chain reaction of resignations and dismissals that went up as high, all the way up to his chief political guru, Mike Z, all the way down to his body man, who was replaced by a conservative person who had to quit after a day or two when his Twitter account, somebody just looked at his Twitter account for a few minutes and went, ooh, well, that's not good. Bruce Rauner, in my opinion, won every news cycle of every day that he was governor up until July. And then it went to heck pretty darn fast. And he has yet to recover. And we're in late December here. I am not in charge, is his new battle cry. To borrow a phrase, what was he thinking? Donald Trump, I alone can fix it. Bruce Rauner, I am not in charge. There's a disconnect there, you see. And it's really difficult for, it's going to be really difficult for him to overcome that, because it's an all-purpose response to him. When he says, he tries to take credit for something, oh, I thought you said you weren't in charge. And when he tries to appear strong, well, you said you weren't in charge. In fact, the reporters followed up with him on this and said, some reporters didn't even report that he had said, I'm not in charge, because they thought, it's got to be a mistake there somewhere. And so a reporter asked him, first question at his next press conference, Governor, did you really mean that? I mean, I am not in charge. Did you really mean to say that? Because that seems sort of weird for a governor to say, I'm not in charge. And he said, no, I stand by it. Okay. And now this is going to get thrown right back at him for the next 11 months. Let's go back to 2013-2014. A wealthy, unknown Republican named Bruce Rauner opened up several field offices throughout the state, hired dozens and dozens of workers for those offices. He locked down the donor community, rich people, early on. And, I mean, almost like right off the bat. And that starved the other candidates, Republican candidates, of money. He secured the Cook County Republican Party endorsement, which was big. He spent millions and millions on a smart, tight campaign and prevailed. The biggest knock on rich guy candidates, and I said this in 2013, and I said that Rauner was different than the usual first-time rich guy candidate. The biggest knock on these first-time rich guy candidates is that they get fleeced by consultants. And this happens all the time. Ron Gidwitz, God love the guy, but I wrote after his campaign ended that his consultants should be banned from Illinois for all time. Blair Hull is yet another example. They took him for every dollar they could because they knew he was going to go down. Rauner was different in 2013-2014. Much different. Now, Pritzker, and I was out with some Rauner people on Saturday night, and one of them said, JB stole our playbook. And he's kind of right when you think about it. He's using much of Rauner's blueprint to try to win this primary. Yes, he has lots of money, more money than all the people in this room combined will ever make for all time. Like 10 times the amount of money. But it's not what you have. It's how you spend it. So he's got, right now, I checked this morning, he has 18 field offices in the state, fully staffed. 18. He has a competent communication staff. He's run some decent TV ads. He even did an ad featuring the reminder to sign up for Obamacare. He's got endorsements from, you know, the AFL-CIO, operating engineers, Illinois Federation of Teachers, which is really big, Cook County Democrats, state county party chairman, and both U.S. senators. Jesse White, Comptroller Mendoza. I see White and Mendoza people over there, which reminds me I better mention them. And Frerichs. So after the speech, it'd be like, Miller, how come you left me out? Anybody else? Now, Chris Kennedy, Daniel Biss are, I like them both, and they could still catch fire. It's only December, right? It's not over. The question becomes, if they do catch fire, how do they fuel it? How do they sustain it? Neither one has yet shown that they can raise the money to sustain something that they might spark up, or that they have the offices, the organization on the ground, the endorsements to do the same. State politics, you know, it often gets compared to national presidential politics. But they're two totally different things. First off, debates. A presidential debate, when you think about it, it's on every channel. You can't really get away from it unless you go, like, to watch HBO or pay-per-view or something. When gubernatorial candidates debate, it's on one channel. And it may not even be statewide. It may just be one town. I remember, it was like an mid-October debate between Rauner and Quinn. It was on one station, and it came in second in the ratings. So I think like 250,000 households approximately watched it. That ain't much in a state of 12 million people or rapidly dwindling. Ask the wire points guy over there. He's probably got all the numbers for you. So few people watch them. It's hard to use a debate to get going. It's much more likely that a debate performance can screw you up, can really trip you up as a candidate, than it can to spark you up and get something moving. Small dollar contributions. You know, Bernie Sanders was known for that. He raised a ton of money in small dollar contributions. It doesn't often happen at the state level. Amia Pawar, that was his dream of doing a small dollar race. And he ended up, you know, dropping out because he just couldn't get that going. The stakes are simply not as high for statewide races as they are for presidential races. I know that's going to disappoint some of you people in here, but they're just not as high. I mean, the governor, thank goodness, does not have access to the nuclear codes or the CIA, because I might be dead by now. And I don't mean just this governor either. There's a few of them, man. Well, all of them. Kennedy and Biss do have some real paths here. They do. I would never count anyone out. It's a long, long way. The field is big, though. There's a lot of candidates. When they talk about how they're trying to, you know, call the herd, winnow the field, they're really not. They want all these candidates because Pritzker is kind of running as an incumbent almost. He's definitely running a party apparatus that the Democrats haven't had in his state for years. That's another thing that Bruce Rauner did. There was no state party apparatus in 2013, 2014 to speak of. I mean, it was a bare bones. It wasn't very well funded. Bruce, basically, that's what those field offices were about. He was doing things that parties are supposed to be doing. And Pritzker is doing things that parties are supposed to be doing. What happens if he loses the primary? I don't know. A lot of that may disappear. What happens if Bruce Rauner loses next November? A lot of Republican legislators are going to be forced to fend for themselves again. It's not going to be pretty. They relied way too much on the governor. We'll talk more about the Republican gubernatorial primary because I figured people will ask me about it during Q&A. So I would just say, there is obviously, unless something changes drastically, like maybe Twitter goes out of business or something, that another wave is heading the governor's way. And this one is not one that will carry him across, however. His campaign apparatus, while good, is nowhere near what it was in 2014. His record that he has to run on, how would you like to run on that record? Not me, boy. So whoever wins the Democratic primary, you know, they're going to give him a good race. Rauner has plenty of money. And he has the Mike Madigan issue, which, make no mistake, is an issue. If Hillary Clinton had won last year, that would have probably been enough, those two things. But as I said at the beginning, we can't change the past. Thank you, and now I will take your questions.
Thank you, Rich. Okay, folks, anybody has any questions, just hold up your slip, and members of our staff will come around and
you gotta have some questions.
Pick them up.
For crying out loud.
Okay. Any observations? Ah, here we go. Great. Rich, this is from Chris Mooney with the University of Illinois.
Oh, one second. Somebody want to get the Lutheran Social Services people out here? Because they're going to start circulating. There they are. They're going to circulate while we're doing Q&A. Get your folding bills out and your checkbooks out. Please. All right. Now, on to the questions.
Okay.
The brilliant questions, I'm sure.
This is from Chris Mooney with the University of Illinois.
Oh, well, this will be a good one.
Okay. How might a 2018 GOP primary battle split the support of Rauner's key money backers? What effects might this have in the general election and beyond? So, there you go.
So, that's a good question. We don't know yet where Richard Uhlein is going to stand on this. But he pretty much can't take any more money from him now. because he was a big contributor to Roy Moore, or to the Roy Moore effort. So he's kind of tainted because he put a lot of money behind an alleged pedophile. And make no mistake, that will be used. I'm kind of surprised. You know, Rauner's basic premise right now is to ignore Jeannie Ives. Talk about Mike Madigan, complain about the media coverage he's getting, and just talk about anything he can except for Jeannie Ives. But I'm kind of surprised that he doesn't have surrogates out there pointing at Roy Moore's loss and telling reporters, hey, you know, the Democrats just won in Alabama. What the heck would happen if for some, you know, crazy thing happens? And it might, who knows? Jeannie Ives wins the primary against Rauner. So Bruce Rauner is definitely a flawed incumbent going into 2018. But he's, well, I mean, think about a Jeannie Ives candidacy. And so I'm just a little surprised that they're not even having surrogates. Then again, people are so upset at him right now, I'm not sure if he could find too many surrogates at the moment. And how would that affect the general? Well, we don't even know. But I tell you, I don't think he can take more money from Uhlein. If Uhlein would even give him any more money. And I don't think that's going to happen after he signed HB 40, the abortion legislation. Next question.
Okay, there seems to be a number of questions here, Rich, about the Attorney General's race.
Yeah.
They range from your thoughts on the Attorney General's
eternal
race.
Eternal. Yes. Eternally long ballot on
exactly
that.
Exactly. To what do you think of the candidates? To will you predict who will win the Democratic Attorney General primary?
Is Quinn here? He was supposed to be here.
I haven't seen Governor Quinn, but he did sign up. But is he in the back of the room or anywhere? No.
We do have one candidate, though, right? Okay. Stand up. Where the heck is Kwame, by the way? Kwame's out actually campaigning. Yeah, I know, I'm a jerk. And what are there? Eight candidates. Pat Quinn gets top ballot spot. You need about 15%, 20% to win that thing? 15, 13, 12, 10? I mean, he goes in with, you know, highest name ID among them. He has some money. I don't know whether he can raise any more. I would say that there are two female candidates in the race, which is a little problematic. If there was one, I think it would be much easier to point to one of those two and say that person could spark something, get it going. What we haven't, I mean, it's just, it started so late, and everybody has been scrambling just to put anything they could together. I mean, it's, you think about trying to find eight campaign managers in October. That is not easy. Eight campaign managers, eight fundraisers, eight field directors, eight. There ain't eight in all of those here. Not it who have experience that you're going to need. So it's just so hard to say, other than Pat Quinn, who was the governor for 6 years, a lieutenant governor for 6 years, treasurer, ran for everything else. Now he's running for attorney general and has the top ballot spot. It's really hard to say that he has no shot at winning. And I mean, I really think he's got a good edge here. We'll see what happens. We'll see if anybody can raise the big time bucks to get on TV. And that's like $1 million a week, right? So keep that in mind. And you can't buy the kind of name ID this guy has. The problem is, you know, he lost, and he brought us Bruce Rauner because he lost. So there may be a lot of residual ill will out there. I don't know yet. Does that answer the question, kind of? No, I ain't predicting nothing.
Okay. This is a little different kind of question. It's from Charlie Garner, former member of the Illinois Gaming Board.
Ah.
Casinos were in the news this AM. Any possibility of further expanding gaming in Illinois?
They were in the news this morning? I took the day off. 4 years ago, 2013, I went out with the Judy Bar Topinka people. She had just died. We were going to do a memorial service for her. We stayed out really late. I woke up really early. I wrote a Capital Facts. I did a few blog posts. I went down to the southwest suburbs, gave a speech, got back in a car, wrote the speech, came back here, did my city club address, got in a car, and blogged on the way home. And, like, I was thinking about that a month ago, thinking, there's no way I'm doing that again. There is no way. So I just shut everything down today. So I have no idea why riverboats were in the news this morning. What happened?
Horse racing.
Oh, because they want to be racinos. Right. So and it's reasonable. They want to have slots or video poker or wherever. I mean, if a bar could have them, why can't a racetrack have them? It seems to me. But you're not going to get anything until Chicago gets something. And then once Chicago gets something, nobody's getting nothing after that. All right? It's not going to be expanded after that. So that's the difficulty in putting something like this together, because everybody's got to try to get into it on it, because they know there is not going to be another bill. Well, there may be bills, but there aren't going to be any more laws after Chicago gets in, because they're not going to want to expand anything anymore. So what happens is you try to put a bill together. It gets to be so big, it collapses of its own weight. And this happens, you know, rinse, repeat, what have you. So I don't know. I mean, they could, but it's going to take everybody pulling in the same direction. And the last time we had a really big gaming bill, we had everybody pulling in the same direction. The governor has said he doesn't care, right? You know, we already have our Chicago River boats are in Indiana. He'd like to see something happen there. But everybody has to be working together to get something like this done. And there has to be somebody who will stand in front of all that and say, no, you're not getting this. Yes, you're getting that. No, you're not getting this. And right now it just doesn't appear that anybody has the capability of or willingness to do that.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Charlie.
Watch the bill pass in January. That's why I don't make predictions.
This is a very tight question.
Okay.
What plans or proposals have J.B. Kennedy, Daniel Biss put forward in one sentence each? What are they campaigning on?
They're all basically campaigning on the same thing. They disagree at the margins. But on the core issues, I think Pritzker has wisely just moved pretty far to the left, or wherever he may have been there to begin with. I don't know. I don't know him that well. There are differences in the margins. There are differences on things that won't pass anyway, which why I say it's on the margins. So, for instance, you know, Biss really wants there to be a tax on trades, right, at the Board of Trade, what have you. You know, CME threatened to leave, and we gave them the store as a state. So I'm really doubting they're going to tax these trades, even though it would be a tiny tax. So, yeah, they fight over stuff that's in the margin, stuff that's not going to really matter or anything. And then on everything else, on abortion, there's a difference there. I know I'm supposed to keep this to one sentence, but who can do that? Chris Kennedy isn't all the way on board on legalizing marijuana, and everybody else is. That's a big difference on a bill that could pass. And he really, I'm not sure what, completely sure what his reticence is there, but he has not been in favor of just coming out and saying, let's do it. And everybody else is like, yeah, okay, fine, let's do it. Let's get the money, let's do this. I was walking on Michigan Avenue last couple of days, and it was like I was in Denver. That or a skunk is loose downtown. And they should really get that skunk.
Very good. This is from City Club member Clint Saban. First, Rich, he wants to know if you will publicly commit to at least one picture of Oscar each week. So you might have to explain who Oscar
did that.
Is.
They did that to me before. I think it's the same guy. It gets a little tough. I'll do one twice a month. How's that? Oscar is my dog, and he's the cutest thing you ever seen. I kind of got out of the habit of doing it, and he got a really bad haircut. It was so horrible. Poor little thing. But yeah, I posted one the other day. I'll do two a month. That's what I'll commit to.
Okay, Clint, so you get two a month. Now, his other question.
Oh, he gets two?
Well, you said you'd do two pictures. How do you think Illinois would be different today if Comptroller Topinka was still with us?
Yeah. That's a good question. I don't really want to think about that too much. You know, she was a friend. But I will say this, that at no time, I think I can say this without actually physically checking the record, but I don't think at any time has the death of a state comptroller mattered more to the history of a state. When she died was also very important. Before she was even sworn in for another term. It set off a chain reaction of events, things that maybe she could have prevented or things that she would have been screaming about. She would have been the one that everyone looked to, right? So when the governor was, you know, doing this right-to-work stuff and all the other stuff that he was doing, she was pro-union, and there would have been a fight. You kind of wonder whether the governor would have gone as far, because that was the one person that he really feared, respected, both. Part of respect is fear in this business. So I think things would have been really different. Or they would have been the same, and she might be running to take him on the primary now. Who knows? Yeah, that's it. That's the answer to my question. You got any more?
Could be, yeah, absolutely. Then we get some accordion playing. This is from Karen Rutan, the Public Health Institute of Metropolitan Chicago. What, if any, impact do you think the General Assembly hearings on sexual harassment will have in 2018?
I hope they have a major effect, because I'm tired of hearing these stories. I'm tired of, just sick of it. And it needs to end. I don't know how anybody could say it any clearer than what's already been said. I think it is changing the culture now. I hope it lasts. But I mean, this has, you know, it's hitting restaurants, it's hitting higher education, you know, the hospitality industry. It's everywhere, because it's everywhere in society. It's literally everywhere. And so this isn't just a readjustment of our politics. It's a readjustment that we as a nation, as a world, what have you, need to look at. So I'm hopeful. But, you know, it's not something where you can just let your guard down. on this, and it's not something that's, you know, it could go away if people don't keep pushing the issue. The hearings themselves, the laws that get passed, and we can pass a lot of laws, but, you know, you pass laws against murder and people still kill each other, doesn't mean that passing laws against murder is the wrong thing to do. So you need to pass the laws, for sure. But people have to stop doing this to each other. I mean, period. For crying out loud.
Okay, thank you, Rich. This is from Dave Lundy with Aileron. How destructive has Rauner's quote-unquote Illinois stinks campaign been to our economic prospects?
Always know where Lundy stands. You know, I mean, the guy, the governor makes a lot of very valid points about why this state is not hospitable to business. I mean, there's no denying it. It's not. And it's not just the state, it's the city. Try putting an awning up in front of your business in the city of Chicago. Like 2 years later, you're still waiting for the permit. So, well, maybe not 2 years, but a year. It's ridiculous. From the little things to the really big things. And it's also his fault for not getting something done. He came in so big and so, to the other side, evil with this right-to-work stuff that it just stopped, cold, dead, any attempt to negotiate. The Democrats have passed legislation in the past on workers' comp that, you know, the medical society didn't like. They passed bills on tort reform that the medical society liked and that the trial lawyers hated. They've passed legislation on pension reform to the point where at one point the IFT, IEA, and AFSCME were all boycotting Speaker Madigan's campaign fund. So they have done this stuff. And it is possible. I mean, Madigan and Rauner, except for this labor stuff, they're kind of two peas in a pod on a lot of things. He could have gotten things done, and he chose not to, and it was a big mistake. And people who worked around him will tell you this, as long as they know they're not being quoted, but they were so busy getting the mechanics together, just getting, you know, learning and getting everything put in place, that he wanted to go out to Decatur, make a speech on right to work. Fine, let him go. Get him out of here. And then he goes out and goes to Decatur, which, by the way, is the hometown of the president of the Illinois AFL-CIO, where he was once mayor, and you make a speech on right to work. Whew. He follows that up with speeches all over. Then they do this whole little local right to work. I don't want to go into all the details. But the thing is, he went off on this fantasy quest instead of staying in Springfield, meeting with legislators, figuring out what was reasonable and doable and getting it done. And now we're close to 3 years in and nothing's been done on this topic. We didn't have 3 years to waste and it's been wasted. So while he makes very valid points, he took a bad situation and didn't make it any better, and in many ways he made it worse, and that's the real tragedy of his term in office so far.
Okay. This is from Andrea Durbin, who's not a City Club member, but Andrea, the senator,
shame on you.
The senator and Loretta are, so think about joining that
different
distinguished
Durbins
group. We'll put her in the family, okay? She's with Illinois Collaboration on Youth, and she'd like to know, will there be a budget by June 30th? Why or why not?
Man, your guess is as good as mine. I don't know. We'll see what he proposes. He's yet to propose like a realistic balanced budget. He claims he has, but he hasn't. And we'll see what the Democrats are willing to do. I think the smart money at the moment, and I don't bet, but the smart money at the moment is betting on a stopgap budget, get through the election. Great, right? I know. But I mean, it's not, you know, this budget that they passed, you know, when the governor isn't passing a budget, then you have 177 governors trying to pass a budget, you know, individual legislators, and the end result is always a mess. Well, I mean, well, since we've only done this once, the end result is always a mess. It's 100% because it's only happened one time. But anytime you try to do something big and you don't have top-down leadership, it's a mess, and this budget is, despite intentions, it's a mess, and it's going to have to be fixed eventually, and I just don't know whether it's going to get fixed next year. I think it may have to wait till the governor's race is over, and either Rauner or whomever the Democrat is will be left with another mess. We really suck at this governing thing in Illinois. I mean, seriously,
can we
really
quote you on that?
Suck at this governing thing. Yes, you can quote me on that.
Thank you. Question here from Jessica Catlin and Marie Donovan with DePaul University. Who are the political up-and-comers that we should be watching? Because she says, at least Marie does, there's a fair amount of gray hair in this room.
Yeah.
Hers included.
I think, you know, without insulting people because I left them out, I mean, one of the easiest ways of looking at up-and-comers is to look at the three legislators who were chosen to be running mates in the Democratic gubernatorial primary. Those three are some of the best of the bunch right there. Hopefully, whoever wins, if they do win the governor's race in the fall next year, they bring the other two back in somehow, because I think all three of them are quality people, humans, legislators. I think there are a lot of folks who are in the General Assembly or in local government right now, too numerous to mention, in both parties, who are doing really good work and are ones to watch. The problem becomes, you know, is the longevity of the people in office. Especially congressional office, they just don't seem to ever want to leave. I guess it's a good gig. I don't know why you'd want to stay out there that long. I can't stand Washington, D.C., but I guess it's a good gig, and you get reelected without doing much work, so whatever. They stay there forever. That's a real problem. But, again, I'm not going to get into names here, but I think everybody knows someone. And there are people in this room who are really folks that I would look to be future leaders of Illinois. Did I mumble through that well enough? It's a good way to get in trouble, start picking one or two people out.
Okay, come back here, come back. Rich, this is from the comptroller's office, Abdon Polish. If Rauner Abdon, he's right over here somewhere. There he is.
How you doing, man?
He wants to know if the governor continues campaigning on trying to convince downstate that Chicago causes all the state's problems, what's some of the long-term damage this could cause the state?
Chicago does cause all of downstate's problems. Aha, it's a joke. It's a joke. I'm joking. Look, you gin that kind of stuff up, it does all kinds of bad things, racially, ethnically, geographically. Amir Pawar's slogan was one state. Won a great campaign, but it was a pretty good slogan. You can stand up here and say it would be nice if this guy or that guy stopped bad mouthing or do it. But, you know, the thing is that, you know, someone who currently lives in downstate, was born in downstate, it works. Okay? And people use things that work. And this works. So when you're downstate, you gripe about Chicago. Those Chicago. That Chicago. That's just eating up all your tax money at Chicago. It works. And it would be nice if people didn't do it, but that divide has been going in Illinois since there's been a Chicago. So I don't see anybody ever stopping it in the future.
Okay. Not even if the Cubs win again, huh?
Cubs ain't winning again. Go Sox. Go Sox.
I knew he was a White Sox fan. Okay, last question.
Thank goodness.
How's it possible for Rauner to win re-election?
He has to run the most negative campaign anybody in this room has ever seen. Period. He has to drive down black turnout, woman turnout, Latino turnout, young people turnout. He's got to drive it all down. The only way to do that is to be unbelievably negative. So negative that, you know, you just gasp at the TV ads. And that's really hit in a wave like this. He's not going to run by touting his accomplishments. And who knows? The wave could break. I don't know. I mean, again, Twitter could go out of business, and that solves a lot of the Republicans' problems right there. But anyway, I just think that's what he has to do. Right now, if you look at Alabama, right? African American turnout was way higher than anyone had down there had projected. There's an intensity behind the electorate now that hasn't existed in the Democratic electorate in an off year since 2005, 2006. And you remember in 2006 in Chicago, they were waiting in line early to vote because of the war, W, etc. And man, it was strong. The Senate Democrats in Illinois got a veto-proof majority for the first time, 2006, you'll recall. So yeah, negative, 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 negative. What Rod did to Judy times 50.
Okay. Let's give Rich Miller a big hand.